Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
Raindrops on roses.
And whiskers on kittens.
Nice.
Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Bright paper packages tied up with strings. Did you see Yankee Candle had a Sound of Music candle line of my favorite things?
Wait, really?
Yeah, it
like,
really did.
One of them was like raindrops on roses.
Yeah, raindrops on roses, whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles, warm woolen mittens, brown paper package. Yep.
I used to not understand, you know, Yankee Candle and what a big business it is. And I would drive up to Vermont to work at Northern Stage when I worked there. And we'd always pass the factory. And I was always like, who buys candles? And now the older I get, I love a nice scented candle, Rob. It's really nice. It's you get home and you just want to relax a little bit. And you put on whiskers and kittens and you're like, oh, I feel great. This is nice. And they last a longer time. So, you know, hey, who am I? I don't know. A candle. I like candles now.
I think you should. They love Yankee Candle. Now, do you know how to sniff a Yankee Candle? Do you know how to sniff a candle to get to figure out what the fragrance is?
Take the top off and then put your nose in there and smell it?
No.
Okay,
You take the top off, but then you sniff the top.
Ooh, the lid.
You sniff the lid. You're not supposed to sniff the candle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I thought now maybe you should learn that. Yeah.
Knowledge is power. Very good.
Hey, wow. Now you know.
You know, I went down a rabbit hole the other day. This is not my favorite thing, but there's some legends that I just don't know a lot about, and I want to know why they're so legendary. And so the great Tallulah Bankhead, you know, people often talk about her and her, and she was very campy, even though she did some serious plays. And basically any play that she did towards the end of her career in the early 60s and late 50s, you know, the people would come out in droves, especially a certain demographic, if you know what I mean, wink, wink.
Me?
Yes. but like she was very popular and she almost would have takes to the audience. But I watched this episode of the Desi and Lucy show where she plays herself visiting them. It is so freaking funny. Her comedic timing is better than Lucy. I mean, her takes to the audience, everything. Oh my God. I love it. You guys, if you haven't younger listeners, cause I know our older friends know exactly who Tallulah Bankhead is, but if you've not watched this woman, it really is. She's something special.
I love Tallulah Bankhead. She's so funny.
Darling. Yes, darling. You know,
what's that story that she went to church once? And the priest was walking down with the bell and the incense, and she goes, "Darling, darling, your dress was marvelous, but your purse is on fire."
She was a sad person. I mean, she was like couldn't stop drinking and smoking, and she died of complications of emphysema. I mean, it was not. I mean, all the things that people loved about her were also part of the things that were her downfall. But my God,
she was the subject of that play Looped. Remember that with Valerie Harper? She was the set of Looped. And then if you want to see good Tallulah Bankhead impressions, either Charles Pierce or Leroy Reams does a really good Tallulah Bankhead.
Oh, my God. That's
when we had dinner with Leroy at Sardi's, he started the evening with telling us a very graphic story about her that I just will not repeat on the air. But it was a funny story. So anyway, so what's your favorite thing?
Well, the reason why I went down the Tallulah Bankhead it ties into my favorite thing. So book. And I'm sure that you have. I have a stack of books on my nightstand that I, you know, eventually will get to. And this book I bought, and I don't remember why I bought it. It's called Follies of God. It's a biography, sort of Tennessee Williams. It's called Follies of God.
Yeah,
Tennessee Williams and the Women of the Fog, written by James Grissom, G-R-I-S-S-O-M. It's so well written. It's a fantastic book. And basically, towards the end of his life, Tennessee Williams, in a very low moment of his life near the end, summoned this writer, this 20-year-old writer, and who was asking a letter of advice. And Tennessee Williams decided that this was the guy that's going to help solve some of his questions in life. Ooh. And he sent him on a mission to on behalf of Tennessee Williams, or Ten as he called him, to talk to the people who mattered most to him throughout his life, and to see if he mattered to them, and to basically assemble a bigger picture of who he was to these women that mattered so deeply. And of course, one of the women were Tallulah Bankhead. A couple other women were women like Maureen Stapleton, Julie Harris, Betty Davis, Katharine Hepburn, Aaliyah Kazan, who's not a woman, Marlon Brando, John Gielgud. I just read about Marion Seldes, Lois Smith, who I was dying to get on the show. And some of these women were his close friends. Some of them were his inspiration, or Maureen Stapleton was basically like a sister to him. They would just sit in bed and, you know, comfort each other. And some of them were just idols that he just dreamt about and loved. But what's so fascinating in this book is that this writer really did sit down with all these women. So what you get is you get all about Tennessee Williams, and he is almost like Leroy Reams truthful and you know, talking about his sexual talking about what it was like to be in LA and the men that he was with and just what it was like to be a struggling artist and how he had to borrow money and just a very honest take on a man's life. And you know that it's honest because then you hear what all these other people have to say about him. And it's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there is a lot of all of that in this book. It is also, I found, to be almost a philosophical book because it deals with life and death and reflection and what it means to be an artist and how an artist is someone who's constantly sometimes struggling and yet we do it because we love it so much. And you get that from every single person that he encounters in this book. And because everyone's near the latter part of their life, they're a lot more reflective about the good parts that they've already lived in their life. And so it definitely has a more philosophical bent. You learn what inspired, if you're a Tennessee Williams fan. I have not read all of his plays. I do not know him probably as well as you know his work, Rob, because you studied so much of it. I feel like you probably did. But I only know, like, I did Glass Menagerie when a couple years ago. I was a gentleman caller, but that's like the only Tennessee Williams play I know. And he talks about why he wrote them and how they changed and how he didn't think he could do it and how the director really helped, you know, focus, you know, Streetcar Named Desire, for instance. He's very honest about all that. I'm just looking at my notes real quick. And he talks about the inspiration, the creation, and how I find that we can all learn about our own artistic lives through his journey as well. Again, this book is called Follies of God, Tennessee Williams and the Women of the Fog, superbly written by James Grissom, G-R-I-S-S-O-M. I do not remember why I bought it. I bought it a year ago on Amazon. I was at a party and someone's like, you should read this. And I bought the book. And then I don't even remember who it is that recommended it to me. So if you're listening to this and you're like, Kevin, that was me, remind me, because I want to thank you, because it really is. It's just such a great book. And I'm really happy that I'm reading it. I've read it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I've never read this book, and now I think I'm going to pick it up. I have a really interesting conundrum with Tennessee Williams that I'm going to ask you about, and then we'll ask our listeners about. Anytime I read one of his plays, I love reading the play. I love reading Glass Menagerie. Every time I read it, I cry like a baby, no matter how many times I've read it. Same with Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Streetcar Named Desire. But when I see them, I'm never engaged in watching them. I'm engaged in reading them, and I love reading them, but I'm never engaged in watching the production. Are there any playwrights that's similar for you, where you enjoy reading the play, But then when you see the play, you're like, eh, is it like Eugene O'Neill or Neil Simon or Arthur Miller, or maybe Tennessee Williams? So I don't know. So I'm posing that question to our listeners. Is there a playwright like that that does it for you, where you enjoy reading the play, but then you can't really watch the play?
Maybe interesting. That's just I can't think of one. I don't read a lot of plays, but I know you do, and you're really good at that. I don't know. And I imagine a lot of it has to do, and he talks about this in the book, is that if he wasn't there and a director who knows his work so intimately as him, I think that it's hard to get it to translate what's inside his head. That's why he's writes so many. He talks about why he writes so many stage directions, and it would drive him crazy that every director is like, throw out the stage directions, don't read that. But for Tennessee Williams, he's like, that's the essence. That's how I get you into the world of what I'm working with in my mind and what I'm trying to, you know, get the spirit with which it's happening. And I know, I remember in school, everyone was like, oh yeah, scene study class. So like, yep, just do what you want to do, you know? And it's like, well, if you want to get what he was intending, I don't know. I wonder how hard it is to create a production that was exactly what he was intending. I don't know. I imagine there's a slight disconnect between the page and the stage.
For me, at least. I don't know. I don't think I could ever. No. I don't know if I'd ever want to direct Tennessee Williams. I just enjoy reading them on my own. And maybe one day I'll play Big Daddy and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Yeah, you will. Like every day you are Big Daddy.
Okay, that's disgusting.
Gross. That's disgusting. I couldn't even get through that.
You gotta get over it, Brick. He's just your friend. You gotta give me a grandchild.
That's scary.
That's that. Thank you. That was a line reading.
Wow.
I don't know who played Big Mama. Maybe you want to be in drag. You can be Big Mama.
I'd love to be in drag. Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. Well, I'm throwing out ideas here. You can be Big Mama.
I kind of want to be Maggie, but that's fine.
You can be Maggie. I don't understand your problem, Rick.
Like a cat in a hot tin roof.
What's going on with you and Skipper?
Skipper, I hardly even know him.
Every time no, I
is that the line?
Every time I come home, it smells like cornbread and poppers in here.
It's the revival of Oklahoma.
Mary, make more chili. So it's a sold out crowd. Mary, get the cornbread.
You have any pepper for the hot sauce? No. Okay.
This poor woman. Mine. Oh my God. This is camp. This is just camp for everybody today. Okay. It does tie into musical theater, so you're going to just have to trust me on this.
Bank head into camp, no.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. All right, folks, in the 1970s, there was a desire on television to really embrace variety shows. We had things like Carol Burnett, we had Donnie and Marie, et cetera, et cetera. And then somebody got the bright idea, what if we took a whole bunch of people who really can't sing and dance, and we put them on a variety show together? And that show was called The Brady Bunch Hour. Yes, in the 1970s, they reunited all of the cast except Eve Plum, who was like, I'm not coming back for this. They replaced her with a woman named Fake Jan, and they did a variety show written by former guest Bruce Valanche that literally was just the Brady Bunch cast singing and dancing and doing sketches. However, there's a lot of good musical theater in there for everybody. So you can go on YouTube and watch it, but I have to just tell you a couple of my favorite things to keep an eye out for. If you watch one episode, you'll have Florence Henderson sing Send in the Clowns.
Well, she did Broadway. You know,
while the Brady Bunch clan sings Razzle Dazzle from Chicago. Oh, I'm not joking. There's a Hollywood tribute where Milton Berle does a conga line and they all sing songs from Singing in the Rain. But one of my absolute personal favorites, because it makes you so uncomfortable, you're going to like literally have to turn away, is episode 6, which stars Rich Little, the comedian or the impersonator who had to tell you who he was impersonating. He develops amnesia and believes he's one of the Brady children. It also gives him a chance to like show off his impersonation skills, like when he does Carol Channing in Hello, Dolly. But the best part of this, folks, is when you get Ann B. Davis, who played the maid, and a couple of the children, and Rip Taylor, what the fuck he's doing in there, God only knows, doing Ease On Down the Road from The Wiz. Once again, folks, an all-white cast singing Ease On Down the Road from The Wiz in this episode. All you have to type in if you don't want to watch the whole episode, and I really think you should because you'll also get to see Barry Williams do Pinball Wizard, is you'll get to see, just type in Ease On Down the Road, Brady Bunch, and you will see it. Maybe we'll even post it for you as well. It is a very special show. It only lasted a few episodes, and you can keep an eye out for Fake Jan and say hi to her too. Also, if you go to the episode where the Brady kids announce they're inviting over the kids from What's Happening, because it's a crossover, you'll also get to hear a song called Disco Lucy, which is the I Love Lucy theme just set to a disco beat.
Incredible.
Yeah. But it's literally so many like musical theater songs pop up. In one episode, you not only get to hear Billy Joel's Piano Man, you also get to hear I Got Love from Pearlie. So that's what we're talking about here, folks.
That's a hodgepodge, a potpourri.
So YouTube, the Brady Bunch Hour, there's only like 9 episodes, so you should be able to get through it. Wow. I would say this, if you drink. If you smoke out, smoke out, then turn it on and get ready. But that is mine this week, the Brady Bunch Hour and all Fantastic. Of its musical theater goodness. So that's mine.
Good one. Very good one.
All right. Then I'm going to ease on down the road and buy a copy of Follies of God.
Enjoy. Yeah. Check it out.
All right. Till next time, everybody.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.